Good morning, Grace. How's it going? Here's part of the reason. Am I muted? You all right? We're good. Part of the reason I accepted the invitation to be here in August in Texas is because I've been speaking for about the last 10 years, traveling around. I've gotten a lot of invitations to be here in Texas. And one of the things I've learned is if you're going to come in the fall in Texas, always get here before NFL opening weekend. Most of you are just, you know, disillusioned that like every single year this is going to be your year and the Cowboys are going to be. And then if I come here in like week two or six, it's just kind of like a cloud is hanging over everybody. And so I wanted to be here when there's still some kind of hope inside your community. And yes, the Broncos, we don't have hope anymore either. So we're realists. We're like, yeah, we're not good. As Scott mentioned, I was a pastor for about 10 years in the Denver metro area, and a couple of things happened to me, a couple of like mini crises that happened that kind of like changed the trajectory of what I'm doing now, and so I want to share a couple of those with you. I was reading about, 14 years ago, I was reading in the book of John. I came to John chapter 17. If you're familiar with that chapter, in John chapter 17, it's the last recorded prayer of Jesus before he's arrested. So this like incredibly crucial time in his life. We see that he goes away and he prays. And he prays for himself for what he's getting ready to go through. He prays for the disciples. And then he prays for all of us. Okay, in this moment of his life, right before he's arrested, he prays for every believer that was alive then and every believer to come. And in that moment, of all the things that he could pray for, he prays for unity. He prays for oneness. He says, God, may my people be one. And he doesn't just pray for unity for the sake of unity. He prays for unity. He says, because when there's unity among my people, people that don't know God will be drawn closer to him. And I remember just, you know, reading through that and just thinking about all the things that I was up to as a pastor and just realizing, like, I'm not spending a lot of time on that. And what would it look like to start dreaming about the people who call on Jesus to all like be on the same, to stack hands and to be on the same team in my city. And so I started to go around and have different coffees and breakfast and lunch with other faith leaders, and I realized that God was doing something because there was something in a lot of different people in my community that was drawn to this. And so we started to gather together. I live in a suburb of Denver that's about the size of Tyler, and we started to gather all the faith leaders together, and we started to invite different civic leaders into the room to share what they saw in our city, to share like, hey, if you were gonna mobilize all the Christians in our community, what's the smartest thing that we should go after? And about 10 years ago, I was sitting in a room with our mayor and 20-something different faith leaders from different congregations, and we would always ask the civic leaders the same thing. We'd say, hey, you know, how'd you end up here? Tell us a little bit about your story. And then we would say, okay, if you could wave a magic wand and change something in our community, what would you do? What would you change? Or if you could mobilize us all and all of the people that come to our congregations on one thing, what is it? And so our mayor brings out this piece of paper and he starts to like, he said, you know, I want to live in a city where there's no financial debt. I want to live in a city where there's no single moms living below the poverty line, where there's no isolated elderly, where there's no at-risk kids. And he had like, 10 or 11 different things that he shared with us. And then he put the piece of paper away, and very much in passing, he just said, you know, if you guys really want to have a big impact in our community, you should start some kind of a neighboring movement. And then he just kind of started, he went on. And we're like, whoa, go back to that. Say more about that. And this is what he said. He said, you know, from the majority of the issues that our community is facing would be eliminated or drastically reduced if we could just become a community of people who are great neighbors. And he went on to say, you know, what we're learning at the city is that relationships always trump programs. And he described this like program that they were trying to like kick up for to address the needs of people who are older and growing more isolated and don't have family around. And he said, you know, we're going to do this program that's trying to prevent people from becoming shut-ins. But what we know is this, if these people are known by the people who live right around them in their same apartment complexes or townhomes or homes, they will never need our program. They'll get cared for out of relationship. And so we're sitting there in this room as a bunch of pastors listening to our mayor say, hey guys, you know what? If you guys could do one of the most basic things the Bible says, it would really help us a lot. It was an awful moment, okay? It was so convicting. And he, by the way, he didn't realize what he was, like, we're sitting there putting, connecting the dots, and he's just like, hey, like, this neighboring stuff is, it's, like, really important, and it works. And so we prayed for him, and then we kind of sat there in the room, and we were like, we need to pay attention to this. And I'll never forget, I'm driving home from that meeting, and there's like 1,000 thoughts running through my head. One of them, the two that I can remember are this. One of them was, I remember thinking to myself, Jesus is smart. Yes, thank you. You would think as a pastor that I'm having that thought a lot. I'm like, oh my goodness. Is it possible that when Jesus gets asked to boil the entire text down to one thing, where he says, love the Lord your God with your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbors. Is it possible that Jesus has given us a very simple strategic plan that if every believer did it, it would actually change the world overnight? So that was my first thought. My second thought is I thought to myself, I'm not actively doing it. Like I'm sitting here, I'm driving home as a pastor of this church, and I'm sitting on the boards of 3 different nonprofits. I'm just trying to, like, you know, figure out how to, like, do church every week and then, like, do these other events that we're up to. And then I'm involved in this thing and that thing, and I'm putting almost zero intentionality into engaging with my actual neighbors. And what the mayor said is just ringing in my head. Is like, just if you could be a part of, like, all of you, if you could just, like, help start some kind of a neighboring movement, it would change our city drastically. And so I went in and I told my wife, Lauren, what had happened. And I said, all right, you're not going to believe what happened in this meeting. And my wife's been ahead of me on most things. I don't know if any of the guys here can relate to that. But, like, so she was more engaged in our neighborhood than I was, which the bar was low. And she was just like, well, what are you going to do about it? And I didn't want to have a lot of accountability. And so I was like, oh, you know, I'm just going to hang out in the front yard more for a year, okay? And I'm going to tell you, that simple act of just being a little bit more visible totally disrupted a lot of the patterns that I had in my life. And it opened up my world, and it opened up me and my eyes into a whole world that was, like, sitting right outside my front door. And I'll come back, I'll tell you a little bit about that later, but let me tell you what happened with this group of pastors. So we get together, we're like, hey, something just happened here, and let's, like, all make a commitment to, like, just think about it. And we kind of had gone around the circle and been like, who's really engaged in their own neighborhood? There was, like, 2 of the 26, you know, pastors that were in the room, like, were really, you know, deeply engaged. And so we came back 2 months later. I had been going around and asking that magic wand question to city leaders for a long time. And there was this woman, she was our assistant city manager, and she had been telling me this for years. She would say, and this doesn't translate well to Texas, but she would say, Dave, next time, you know what you should do with all those people that go to all those churches? Next time it snows, why don't you get them to shovel their neighbor's driveway? And she would say that to me, and I would just be like, Like, I was hoping for something really sexy, like the church eradicates homelessness, or, like, you know, something big. And she was just trying to tell me, why don't you get these people to just care about the people who live right across the street? And so when the mayor told me the neighboring stuff, I'm like, Vicky's been, like, influencing the mayor too. I mean, she was, like, the key to all of this. And so I invite Vicky to come in and to meet with our pastors the next time we meet. Vicky comes in, it's the same group, or 2 months later, and she just starts to share about all these pragmatic ways of why neighboring makes a difference. She talks about the fact that in neighborhoods where people know the first names of their neighbors, the crime rate is 82% less. She talks about the fact when there's a natural disaster, when there's a crisis, that your neighbors are almost always your first responders because the systems are overwhelmed. She started to share with us out of Malcolm Gladwell's book, Outliers, all of this, like, data about how when people are connected with their actual neighbors, they live significantly longer. And we're just sitting there taking notes and writing all of it down, and we're also thinking to ourselves, and Jesus said to do this. Like, this is baked into, like, the DNA of who we're supposed to be and who the types of things that we're supposed to be involved in. And then Vicky shared something, she wasn't trying to be mean, but we were doing, like, a little Q&A at the pastors afterwards, and one of the pastors asked a question, and she just said this very much in passing. She said, listen, from the city's perspective, there isn't a noticeable difference in how Christians and non-Christians neighbor in our community. Now, It felt awful to hear that. It felt so awful that we argued with her about her perception. We tried to like, you know, turn it around. And then we stopped and we realized she's right. There's not, in our city, there's not a noticeable drastic difference in the way Christians and non-Christians treat their actual neighbors. Like, not a noticeable enough difference where our city leaders would say, oh yeah, the Christians are the best neighbors in our town. And I've shared that quote in rooms with leaders from over 500 cities. Never once have I had a civic leader come up and go, oh, Dave and Tyler, the Christians are by far the best neighbors. And like, when she said that, it created so much dissonance inside of me. Like, I started to get, like, angry and, like, irritated. I was like, how is it possible that, like, when the entire text is boiled down to one thing, it's love God with everything you have, heart, mind, soul, and strength, love your neighbors as yourself, and yet today in our culture, in our cities, in your city and my city, we as believers aren't known as being, like, differentiated of, like, we are the best neighbors, or we are drastically improved or different than people who don't have faith. And I, like, you ever see something on the news? I'm sure this has never happened to you. You see something on the news and you start to get, like, irritated or angry. I was feeling that way about this. And then I started to ask a different question that kind of, like, changed and shifted my mood. I started to ask this question. I'm like, I wonder how you become a pastor who's not engaged in his own neighborhood. And all of a sudden, I started to read passages. And by the way, my mood changed from being, like, irritated and angry to, like, reflective and convicted. And I started to read parts of the Bible that I had read, and I grew up in the church that I had read hundreds of times, that I had given multiple sermons on, and they just started to take on a new light. And we're gonna dig into one of those here today. So if you have a Bible, you can open up to Luke 10. If not, we're gonna put it up on the screen. As I've shared my journey with others, I've come to realize that many of us have become inoculated to the Great Commandment. It's one of those things that we've heard over and over and over again, and we've heard it so much that we've lost touch with some of its power. The reason why we hear the Great Commandment over and over again is because it's actually really good. It's actually like the key to us leaning in and living out the gospel. And so we're going to pick it up in Luke 10, verse 25. My prayer is that you'd see this through a new lens with fresh eyes today. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What is written in the law, he replied. How do you read it? Okay, this happens a couple times throughout the Gospels. A person comes to Jesus with a question. He realizes something else is going on here, and he invites the person to answer their own question. He answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. You have answered correctly, Jesus replied. Do this and you will live. This guy gives the perfect textbook answer to his own question, and Jesus affirms him and said, yes, do this and you will live. Okay, but then look at what happens. Verse 28, you ever read something in the Bible and you see yourself in the story? Okay, like this is what happened to me. Verse 28, but he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? But he gives this perfect answer to this question that he was asking. And then the next thing we read about him is he's trying to figure a way, he's trying to find a loophole. But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, and who, like, Jesus, neighbor, like, come on, what does that really mean? You ever do this? You ever try to, like, mess with the definition? Like maybe so that it most easily fits into what you're already up to? If you would like to know how to become a pastor who's not engaged in his own neighborhood, here's the playbook. Just define the word neighbor so that it most easily fits into what you're already up to. I know this because this is what I did. And by the way, what Jesus does in response, he's like, oh, we're going to play the define the word neighbor game. He just blows up the definition of neighbor on the guy, and he tells the story of the Good Samaritan. Now, for much of my life, I thought and like I acted like the big idea of the story of the Good Samaritan is that everyone's our neighbor. Right? Can you see how you could get there? Like, you ever thought about the story of the Good Samaritan? You're kind of like, everybody, oh, wow, that's incredible. The Samaritan did that. Like, everybody's my neighbor. You like that? Now, here's the problem. That's not what it says. The story of the Good Samaritan says, no matter where you are in the world, no matter who's doing the caring, if you care for the person in front of you, that's an act of loving your neighbor. Now, there's a difference between that and everybody's my neighbor. When everybody's your neighbor, oftentimes nobody is. When everyone's your neighbor, like for me, everyone was my neighbor. I'm a pastor. Like I'm doing all kinds of good stuff. I'm kind of just neighboring all the time. Now, if you can get yourself there, then you end up like me with I had a really powerful, profound, metaphoric love for my metaphoric neighbor. And man, metaphorically, I was killing it. And in real life, there were people who were sleeping 60, 70 feet away from me, and I didn't even know their name. Like I had figured out a way to make it so vague. Like, so, you know, oftentimes, if you just aim for everything, you can hit nothing. And I had, like, turned this, like, profound, powerful teaching of Jesus, like the centerpiece of what we're supposed to be aiming for, I had figured out a way to make it so nice and vague that I excused myself from actually thinking that Jesus was talking about the people who were living right next to me. Now, I want to validate something clearly. The story of the Good Samaritan, it says this: the people who are at your work that you're building a relationship with, the people who you're overseas with that you interact with, the people down at the rescue mission, all of those, that's all neighboring. That's all an act of loving your neighboring. I want to continue to lift that up and validate it. But here's the deal. All of that doesn't sprinkle magic fairy dust over our actual neighbors, and all of a sudden Jesus isn't talking about them. And what I learned is like that's like the story of the Good Samaritan is like graduate level AP neighboring. I was like, I probably need to like go back to kindergarten, draw a circle around the place that God has put me, and then begin working out from there. And so, and just in doing that, and Vicky, our friend, and Jay, who co-authored the book with me, like they had this little quiz. Like we came up with this little quiz, and it's a quiz that I'm gonna invite you to do right now. It's a quiz that I did not do very well at when I first took it. Okay, so but here's the quiz. Okay, so this little tic-tac-toe board. You're gonna get one of these magnets when you leave today. This little tic-tac-toe board. Well, that center square represents your house. Now, I want you to imagine you walk outside the front door of your apartment, your condo, your townhome, your ranch, your home, whoever you are in this room, you have neighbors. Okay, so you're just imagine you're, and you don't have to take it literal, like it's this person in the catty corner and back. Like, just think about the 8 most logical, like, units to you. Okay, now, I want to know this. I want to know, how many of those homes can you list off, like, the adults' names that live in those residences? So just take a second to work through, like, those 8 in your mind. How many of those boxes, of those 8 boxes, do you know the names? And we'll just go adults. We won't talk about kids or dogs or anything, but if you know those, that's great. Okay, that guy's cheating, asking his wife. The guy in the black shirt right there. Write down, like, real people's names. Annoying lady, it does not count as a name. Some of you might be feeling like I did the first time I did this quiz, where I started to realize, oh no, I've met all of these people, and most of them, I can't remember their names. Or I remember taking this, and it just felt so awful to have like some of these blank squares that like I knew somebody like 15 houses away, so I wrote theirs down. I was like writing down blue truck and like stuff like that. Like, how many actual names? Now, I want to ask you this, in this room right now, raise your hand if you can do all 8. You think you can do the adults' names in all 8. Go ahead and raise your hand. Raise them up. Hi. Okay, now, how many of you, if I called you up here right now, you go, I can do the names in 5 or more of those boxes. So you can do over half of the names. Go ahead and raise your hands. I want you everybody to look around. Okay. I'm going to be generous. That's 30% of the room. My friends and I have given out about 650,000 of these magnets now. I've been in a lot of rooms sharing my story, doing the quiz. I have never once been in a room of Christians where more than half of the room can list off more than half of their neighbors' names. Here's why I think that matters. In order to love somebody, it's helpful to know their first name. Can we disagree on that? Okay, like I don't write songs about love and I'm not a poet, like all that stuff, but I'm just pretty sure that that's a fact, okay? Here's what happened to me. I had a napkin that was sitting on my fridge that looked like this tic-tac-toe board. And I wrote down the names of the two households that I could do, and my wife knew a lot more, but she's mean, and so she wouldn't help me, okay? So I'm looking at those things, and I'm like, I'm going to do something about it. And it was within literally a day, I was out near my front porch, and I saw one of my neighbors who was in the blank squares, who I'd met before over there, and I just remember thinking, and he's mowing his lawn. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, yeah, I'm going to go meet him. But I didn't even take a step. Before I even took a step, I thought, oh, I can't, like, going and meeting him while he's mowing his lawn, that's weird. And I thought, you know, I'll just kind of like hang out in my front yard. And I was like, that's more weird. And then I actually had this thought, I'm like, I'll go back inside. And I caught myself and I'm like, I'm doing it. I'm trying to find the loophole. And I will never forget taking like the first step down the driveway and walking down and then across. And my neighbor's sitting there like looking at me. And like stopping the lawnmower. And I said, hey, man. I know I've lived next to you for like, I know I've met you 3 times, we've lived next to each other for like 2 years. I forgot your name. I go, I'm Dave. And he said something awful. He said, I know. And then he said very graciously, he's like, I'm Matt. And my wife, Jan, and we talked for like 20 seconds. And then I went into my house and I did something very important. What did I do? I wrote it down. And after about 6 weeks of mildly awkward moments like that, by the way, here's what you need, the skill you need to be a good neighbor is the courage to lean into mildly awkward moments, okay? It's mildly awkward to go and to admit, by the way, I could have gone and like Googled his name. I could have like snuck into his mailbox. I could have gone like, you know, onto Nextdoor and had to like wade through a bunch of like negative crap, okay? But I didn't do any of that. I looked at him in the face like a human and I said, I messed up. I don't know your name. I forgot it. There's an act of like vulnerability there when we lean into that, it's really powerful. And so I went and about 6 weeks it took me to have this whole thing filled out. And I'm just going to tell you, it just messed me up. Like all of a sudden, like I'm looking at these and I'm starting to go, these are like real people with real names and with real stories. And some of them, like, they didn't want to engage with me any more than learning a name. They were just really busy and they just wanted to get their garage door up and their garage door down. Okay? And I'll just give, I'm going to save you some time. Don't stalk those people. It's not a good use of your time. But some of them I started to lean towards and it went from, hey, man, to, hey, Matt. To, hey, Matt, like, did you see the end of that game? Can you believe, like, Dak threw another pick in the fourth quarter? Or, I don't know how you guys process your pain, but, like, that's how I imagine it, okay? Oh, and then to, like, hey, like, could you help me move something in my garage, like, 20 feet? To, hey, like, you guys are going to be watching the game, and we're going to be watching the game. Let's just watch it together. To like, hey, like your son is back here, like his car's back here all the time. Did he move back in and how's that going? To like sitting across a dining room table, talking about like our stories and our families and the things that we believe and don't believe in. Like this thing, that, and by the way, that's like a 2.5 year like little narrative I just gave you. These are like real relationships take time, but the key is to not get stuck. And so it's just about taking the next step and the next step and the next step. But this thing that I had like dreamed about for so long, it was sitting right outside my front door, but it doesn't ever happen if you don't learn their name. Like so much of it is just like taking that first step for me is like moving, you know, up an escalator. It's like you just take that first step. So much of momentum is just getting going. And it's easy to just remain stuck and to just go, yeah, like, I don't know. I just kind of wave to those people and move by. But then sometimes you actually start to go, wait a minute, this is a spiritual thing. They're like, what we do in our front yard counts. That's like a really important thought. Like, what we do in our front yard counts. There's something sacred that's happening right outside your front door. And there's all, like, the New and the Old Testament is filled with this deep theology of place that a lot of us, I think, have lost. Like where we live matters. God's placed you where you are for a reason. And when we start to embrace that, we start to realize that, like, yes, what happens in our front yards counts. It really does. It counts in the kingdom. And so I want to encourage you. Here's my one big takeaway for everybody this morning is this. Is I'm not going to ask you to, like, love your neighbor. Okay, that's radical Jesus stuff. Okay, I'm going to ask you to do something. Like, would you just be willing to learn and retain and use your neighbor's names? Like, this is my biggest leadership lesson in this whole thing, has been this whole being, like, the honor of being part of this, like, movement that's happened. My whole life, people told me, Dave, good leaders set the bar high. They set the bar high, and I think that's true. If you have a small group of people of 10 or 12, and you're trying to, like, move that group somewhere, like, setting the bar high, people will get close to the bar, they'll get over the bar. But here's what I learned about starting a movement. If you want to start a movement, the key isn't to set the bar high. The key is to set the bar so low that people can't crawl underneath it. Just take the first step. Would you just be willing to go, this is a spiritual act. Like actually just, like, engaging people in my neighborhood. Thinking that here's the bottom line. This is going to sound awful. Like, the reason why I didn't know those people's names, the reason why I could only fill out 2 of these 8 squares is because these people weren't important enough for me to actually take the time and energy to remember their names. I had filled up my life with so many things that they had just become, like, people that, like, I didn't even see. And weren't even important. And I think the cool thing is this, like, there's something really, really profound about building relationships based on proximity. As a pastor for a number of years, I just kind of drifted into a place where most of my friends, they all thought about the world the same way that I did. And what I learned is that, like, when you start to build relationships based on proximity, it's the antidote to living in a Christian bubble. It's the antidote to, like, our polarized culture that we live in. And it's also, like, the best way to live. It's the way that, the part of the genius of the great commandment, this idea of loving your neighbor, is I think that Jesus knows it puts you out into the game where, like, you don't choose who your neighbors are. Okay, so when you start to spend time with them, you realize you're spending time with people who think about the world totally differently than you do. And the goal isn't necessarily, like, I got to go spend time with them just so I can get them to think everything, you know, politically, everything, really, like, the same way that I do. The goal, the win, is that we actually live in the tension of being connected to people who think about the world differently than you. That's where Jesus wants us at. Like that, like everything that we do in here, I love the leadership of your church. We have all these common people have poured into us, and, like, we think the same way. Like they believe this too. Is, like, what we do here is great. It's vital. It's important because we're getting equipped to go out and to take the. But this isn't the end game. The end game is out there. It's in our neighborhoods. It's in our places of work. And I think it's just important for us to keep that in mind. And so if the end game is out there, could we just be actively taking some small steps that help us move down the road so that we don't just get stuck, so that we don't just end up living on the surface with the people who God has placed right around us? And so my invitation to you is to, like, take this thing when you walk out the doors today. If you're walking back through those mill doors, that's where these are. Take this thing, put it on your fridge, and let it haunt you and mess up your life like it did to me. Now, I'll be honest with you. There's a reason why, as a pastor, that I wasn't engaged in my own neighborhood. There's a number of them. One of them is because I knew that my neighbors were always going to be there. It's way easier for me to go lead some effort downtown and to, like, do something at the rescue mission than it is for me to do something with my neighbors, because I can go out and serve and I can come back. My neighbors, it turns out, they're always there, right? And some of them, dude, they are messy. Like, some of them, their lives are, I knew it in the back of my mind. I'm like, man, who knows what's going on behind those doors, okay? But I'll tell you this too, it's like, it's hard and it's messy, and I don't ever want to go back. It's like having kids, for those of you that have kids, right? Like, it's just, there's just something about it that I can't ever go back. I can't ever go back. And I think most of us have this inside of us. Some of you can remember what it was like when people were more engaged with the people that live right around them, and you pine for that. You desire that. Some of you, if you've never experienced, I'm just going to tell you, man, it's good. It's good. It's whole. Like when I like drive in and out of my neighborhood to live in a place where it just goes beyond like the wave and the little servicey stuff, but to like, you know, there's a community here of people who like care for each other, who actually like each other, who have worked through conflict in the past together. It's like, it's the gospel. It's the kingdom that starts to break out in those places. But it doesn't happen if you won't go and admit that you don't know their names. And it doesn't happen overnight. And here's where it gets cool. Like I said this in the other services today. If everybody in this room right here says, you know what, okay, I'm going to go take your little magnet. I'm just going to start taking some small next steps. There's about 1,500 households that call Grace Home. And I just want you to kind of imagine of how the math goes on that. Okay, so if there's 1,500 households that call Grace Home, and every single one of you, your family, says, we're going to do this, okay, that means 12,000 households get touched by this one church in the city. 12,000, and let's just go low. Let's say there's only three people in each household. That means 36,000 lives get touched if you are willing to say, hey, I'm just going to take some next small steps. I'm just going to like lean into this idea that like when Jesus said love your neighbor, he meant my actual neighbors too. A friend of mine said this, and it's just really stuck with me. He said, you know, in this life, we can only do a few things really well. I think it would be wise to make sure that one of them is the thing that Jesus said matters most. Let's pray. God, thanks for giving us this incredible command that has the potential to do so much for us and for the people that live around us. God, will you give us a passion and a desire to take the Great Commandment literally and seriously? Help us to make time to build relationships with the people that you've placed around us. God, give us courage to lean into the kinds of lives that you want us to live. Thanks for your word, Lord, for the fact that if our heart is in the right place, the things that we've read multiple times can take on a whole new light. In your name, amen.